brought to you by Burr Foreman and broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Results Matter Radio brought to you by our friends at Burr & Foreman. Stone, how you doing?
I am doing well. How's your week been, man?
Good. Just got started yesterday. We got to visit with our friends at Tie Atlanta, which is always one of my favorite things to do. I love that organization and all the good work that they do.
It's a fantastic group of people, and they really are so committed to developing not only the youth, but also anyone who is genuinely interested in providing value to the marketplace. And it was kind of exciting to learn that Arul and his crew over at Enrich, they're going to be at Oracle Open World when we do the remote broadcast next month.
That's right. We will be going to San Francisco at the end of next month to interview some of the folks that are taking part in Oracle Open World.
So field trips like that are a lot of fun, but not any more fun than the kind of stuff we get to do in studio.
That's right.
This one's going to be a lot of fun. We have a studio full, and a little bit later in the program, we're going to visit with a lot of different folks. We're going to get a chance to visit with Joy Lynn Fields and Catherine Cates and Paige Hardy. But first up on Results Matter Radio, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce from the Moto Moto Agency, Ms. Moira Vetter. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, Moira, want to talk a little bit about Moto Moto. What are you guys doing for folks?
We are a business-to-business marketing firm, and with the economy being what it is and the competitive marketplace, everything's shifting. It's very challenging for marketers right now. Brands are really taking a beating. And so we focus very much on entrepreneurs and mid-stage companies, and there really is no better time for entrepreneurs than now. And I think that no one needs entrepreneurs more than now. So our focus on that is really
now good. Do you think it's a good time for entrepreneurs because the playing field is kind of leveled with social media?
I don't think it is driven so much by social media as the conditions in the market. I feel that entrepreneurship, when you don't have something to lose, the risks are much easier to take. And a lot of people have been displaced or had their beliefs about where they stood in the market shift. And so I think that the playing field is leveled more so by economic indicators.
So now, when you're saying entrepreneurs, what size business is an entrepreneur to you?
To me, all size businesses should have a spirit of entrepreneurship in them. So obviously, most people think that entrepreneurs are people that start businesses, might be in the seed phase, early development stage of their business. But I really focus more on serial entrepreneurs. So that can be in the second stage of development, scaling up their organizations. And then, of course, I work with a lot of large corporations who are trying to infuse the spirit of entrepreneurship back in with innovation.
Now, do you help those enterprise companies foster that entrepreneurial culture, or are they just doing things that are entrepreneurial to you?
No, we do help them with the culture. What we find, and I think this is very true of brand, many people think of marketing as the promotional P, if you think of the four P's. And we really think of it holistically as the whole business. And so most of the companies we help, there is a component of executive vision, internal communication, and external communication that's required to really ensure that that entrepreneurial instinct is really pervasive in the culture.
Now, in an enterprise that has some size and bureaucracy, is it difficult to kind of make the culture that risk tolerant?
Yes. That's really, we kind of view ourselves as the A-team. We come in screaming with machetes and make it pretty exciting. We're a bunch of pushy people, and we have a good sense of humor, which you really need. And I think if everyone knows what they're signing up for and you really have leadership support, then everyone will get on board. And if you have a safe partner to do that with, which Moto Moto absolutely is, then people take to it easier.
Can you share maybe some success stories that you were able to go into a company and kind of revitalize their entrepreneurial spirit?
Well, I think of several of the mid-market companies. Often what happens, and I'm not going to list the clients by name, but a very similar situation that we see with clients, They've reached the mid-market. Let's say they're a $50 to $100 million company, and often mature businesses, maybe 20 years old, and they really need to reinvent themselves. And so we often will participate as management infuses new dollars from private equity partners, management consultants to help them sort of re-envision their management team, mm-hmm. and then revisit all of their business strategies.
Now, part of your marketing is you wrote a book.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I recently was interviewed about the book, and somebody asked me, you know, why did you write it? And I feel like so much of the advice I've been giving over the last 25 years is the same advice, because I find that while every
entrepreneur... Because we're not that smart, right?
No.
We make the same mistakes over and over again.
You do. But I think that while entrepreneurs do absolutely different things, they do the different things in the same ways. And so they fumble in the same places. They lose sight of the same things by nature of being entrepreneurs. Basically, this book was my attempt to stop saying the same thing over and over and
so
capture...
So just hand them a book.
Save me the
that
time.
Saves a couple
yes.
meetings, right?
It does.
So what's the title of the book?
It's called Adventure, An Outsider's Inside View of Getting an Entrepreneur to Market.
And a couple key takeaways from the book?
One of the things we really focused on in the book is not just the entrepreneur, who we do believe is the sort of spark that makes it happen, but the teams that support them and the investors that invest in them. Because if you do not have a holistic system around an entrepreneur, you cannot bring that whole idea to fruition. And so the book, while it focuses on the entrepreneurial journey and the growth of a business, it really focuses on how the teams themselves and the investors play different roles at different mm-hmm. points in time in the business.
And then is there kind of tricks to keep it from being not adversarial but very collaborative so that everybody's kind of rowing the same way?
It is, and a lot of that has to do with candor and being willing to be vulnerable. We do talk a lot about that in the book. And those are, you know, going back to the kinds of clients we work with, mm-hmm. they're open people that are willing to have honest conversations about where they're struggling, what they want to achieve, and be willing to have that change if it needs to.
Now, being vulnerable and being open, do you see any differences in working with different gender, you know, men or women, when it comes to vulnerable and openness?
I do. I've spent probably, over 25, really my entire career in very male-dominated fields, in the technology area and in healthcare. And I feel that in almost categorically, they hold up men, hold up a veil of perfection. They do not want to admit vulnerabilities. I find
right,
that,
like, they have all the answers.
Yeah.
So just don't question.
No,
just go along with this.
Just do what I tell you, okay? And we're not the do-what-you-tell-you people. So, I think they actually need that and enjoy that. And I think that's one of the reasons we've been successful. We're not yes women. I feel that women-owned businesses are much more comfortable being vulnerable, sometimes too much so.
Mm-hmm.
They underestimate their own strengths. So I think there's a different dynamic going on depending on which kind of business you're working with.
Now, you mentioned that you believe that entrepreneurs are kind of the key linchpin in terms of growing the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you believe that anybody can be an entrepreneur?
This is the million-dollar question, and I'm sad to say I don't believe anyone can be an entrepreneur. I feel that there are certain qualities that I think almost all three-year-olds could be entrepreneurs, but I unfortunately believe that many of our social systems and educational systems strip away the things that by the time you get to adulthood or your late teens, some of the entrepreneurs have had it bred out of them. So
what qualities do you think that those are?
Well, the two in particular one in particular is the risk aversion. You brought up risk.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that that there is a degree of there's a premium placed on not taking risks, being safe, and
well, do you think the premium's not really on that, but on just being right? And sometimes you have to take a risk and be wrong in order to move the ball a little bit.
Well, it can be that. And also, given, again, the economic conditions in the competitive marketplace, the focus on rewards and guaranteed results. There is a huge emphasis right now on results and delivering them consistently. And to be able to take the risks that might pay off in the long term is a lot harder at a time like this.
Right. Well, you see, we were talking about movies before the show started. That's why there's Fast and Furious 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
It's a lot easier to make sequels of things that had a semi-level of success rather than go out on a limb and create a new movie.
Yeah, which is why I like serial entrepreneurs, because they do it again and again. They do it well.
So now when you're working with the serial entrepreneur, how does that initial consultation go? What's the pain they're having and why do they pick you?
The pain that they're having is usually a very aggressive vision and sometimes very unreasonable vision in terms of timing or a result desired, and not enough people around them that can see the possibility or the way to accomplish that. And so we as a firm help them both strategically and tactically. If you need brains, we help you augment the brains on your team. And if you need hands, we help you get it done. And so I feel that that's where they can use us for that high-end strategic work in the C-suite with their top executives and their private, whatever investment structure, whoever their investors are, all the way down to their
to the boots
the
on the
trenches.
Ground that's doing the work.
Yeah, and people don't have the luxury these days of working with three and four firms to pull off what they need to do.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you get into this line of work?
I started on the client side in technology. So I was bred from entrepreneurship and actually raised in an entrepreneurial business and started running register when I was 7 in my dad's business. So I was always exposed to entrepreneurial ventures. Then in my earlier career, I was exposed to the agency and the marketing world. And so I just have naturally found a way to bring the two together, how marketing fuels entrepreneurship and vice versa.
Now, the book that you have out now, is this your first book?
It's the first book, yes.
So can you share a little bit about what it was like writing the book?
It was torturous, writing the book.
It didn't just one weekend knocked it out?
No.
Flowed like
no,
water?
No, 4 years, 4 years.
How much coffee? A lot of coffee.
Oh, a lot of it, yeah. Now, Nora Ephron says that the hardest thing about writing is writing.
Is writing, yeah.
And that is absolutely true. And the hardest thing is rewriting it. And rewriting it. Mm-hmm. So it was probably written about 6 times.
And then when you got it out, is it just recently released or how long has it been out?
Several months.
So now what's it like going out and marketing the book?
It's very interesting going out marketing the book. I'm getting tremendous response to it from very different communities because the book focuses on entrepreneurs and then separately focuses on investors and entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two different audiences.
Sure.
There's a lot of emphasis now on female entrepreneurs, which is a whole subset of people that have different questions related to the content. And then there is a huge push right now on youth entrepreneurship. And I'm very involved in some education initiatives that focus on that. So there are, I don't know, I have to go different directions with it.
Now, you mentioned earlier that the school system you feel are kind of eliminating some entrepreneurs just by their, I guess, their structure, bureaucracy, their teaching techniques. What, in your perfect world, how would you grow entrepreneurs?
I feel that, and this is very near and dear to my heart because I have 3-year-olds, so I'm assessing schools right now, but to me, the best teaching environments are the ones that set alive a fire for learning in the child, where they naturally are drawn to it. And to me, that is the secret, is finding your inner passion, all entrepreneurs that have an inner passion and can follow it. So to me, it's education systems that are not imposing a doctrine or stripping away or creating conforming people, but instead allowing them to find their own passion will lead to future entrepreneurs.
And if somebody wanted to learn more about your book, is there a website for the book?
There is. It is adventurethebook.com.
And your firm?
Is motomotoagency.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you so much.
You going to hang out with us while we visit with our
other
guests?
Absolutely. I'm going to give people a hard time when it's their turn.
Terrific. Well, next up on Results Matter Radio, we have with us Miss Joy Lynn Fields. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I understand that you know a thing or two about research, yeah?
Just a little bit.
So give us a little bit of an overview about your organization and what you're out there trying to do for folks.
The name of my company is Joylin Inc., and we are a qualitative market research company. So we are conducting focus groups and individual interviews for most of the, a lot of major corporations, Fortune 500 global companies as well, basically trying to help them understand why people are doing what they're doing.
So now, do focus groups still work in today's day and age?
Absolutely. I think today focus groups are serving two purposes. I think they are providing the why behind trying to understand the consumer.
Mm-hmm. But
I think they're also providing clients with a backroom setting for discussing their business away from the office. And so you put those two things together, and you end up using consumer insights to basically forge conversation between people.
Now, but do they tell the truth, the consumer, in those in that environment?
If I do my job right.
If you do it. So what are some tricks to getting people to tell the truth?
You know, I think number one is you have to make them feel comfortable saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with certain topics that may not be so socially acceptable to say their opinion, you have to create a forum that makes them comfortable regardless of what they say, and assume that that you've heard it before. Assume other people have said it.
Now, in my head, I'm picturing a focus group where the executives are behind a, you know, glass window, double, whatever it's called, where they can see the people and then the people can't see them. And so, and there's a circle or a conference room and they're peppering them with questions. Is that still how it's done?
Still how it's done. It's one format. It also is another format is online.
Mm-hmm.
Or through web webcams as well. But traditional focus groups are still very prominent today, and it could be a group of people, or it could be one-on-one, maybe two or three people together. But I'm the person who would typically be in the room peppering those people with questions.
Now, in that environment, I've been part of focus groups before, and I've seen where some people like kind of take over the room. Like, how do you deal with that person that, you know, it seems like is intimidating the other people in the room because they're so passionate about whatever the subject matter is?
I think, you know, part of that is just my training. And there are little tricks and tips that you do just to encourage conversation with other people. You can detour things with body language. You can move around the room. You can put yourself in a position where that person is not in direct eye contact with you. Little things like that that can just discourage it without calling
them
out.
Right.
You know, because if you shut them down, then typically other people are going to shut down as well because they're going to start filtering and saying, is this okay to say?
Right. So that must be a tricky part of your job.
It's a fun part.
So do you ever collect data that is just so far out, 180 degrees out from what the executives thought it was going to be, and they're really surprised?
Most of the time.
It happens a lot?
It happens a lot. You know, I always say it's funny that people will sit in a room and they will look at 20 or 30 options and they think they know the right three that they can narrow down. And I'm saying, if you can't narrow down the one, why do you think you can narrow down the three? So, you know, when you bring it into a group of folks and you start hearing their rationale behind things, the people who are not so close to the business, they quite often get surprised, and that's what sparks good conversation. It's also what makes it pay out and makes the investment pay out in research.
Now, you talk about qualitative research. Can you talk about what that means?
Qualitative, I would say, there are two kinds. There's qualitative and quantitative,
mm-hmm.
and most people are familiar with the quantitative side, the numerical or the statistical side. Qualitative is more the why, understanding people's underlying motivations and reasons for having an opinion. And so it could be understanding why they're behaving a certain way or why they just don't like or do like something and are gravitating towards it. And so, you know, a quantitative setting is going to tell you what people said. Did they say yes or no? But it's not going to tell you why they said that. And so it provides kind of a compass for companies sometimes to aid in decision making. It's not going to give you that statistical answer, but it's going to give you a direction to follow.
Can you share an example of a why that kind of changed the course of some company? I mean, you don't have to name the name of the company, but maybe a decision that they thought it was going to be something, and then all of a sudden you dug a little deeper, and then you got a different why than maybe they thought?
I'm trying not to name names here. Let's take maybe a company has a major competitor,
mm-hmm.
and you get in and you don't understand why they're buying your competitor when everybody loves your mascot.
Right.
Everybody knows it. Everybody
right.
loves you, but they don't. But they're not buying you.
But
they're
now
buying
it's time
the competitor.
To make a buying choice, and they're choosing the competitor.
Yeah, and you get into digging into why they feel the way they do, and
right.
you find out that they're just confused about who the mascot's for.
Uh-huh.
And you realize that all of a sudden they had all of these other reasons why they think your product is not going to do well that is embedded in your history. And they also think the mascot is really representing the other company.
So that level of confusion, you're so into your company, you can't even see that, right? It's just too ingrained.
Right. And there are things that can help with that once you identify that. All of a sudden, if that mascot is on the package when they go to the store, that changes the dynamics of things. But if you don't know that that's a problem, then you would never know to do that.
Right. So then when you're having a conversation with your client and this stuff bubbles up, are they like, oh, my God, it was right in front of me the whole time? Like, are they embarrassed or what is that like?
You know, they're not. They're never embarrassed. I think depending on who has ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that can make things a little tedious if that person is in the back room and owns the idea. But whenever there's just a, you know, an aha moment like that, people get really motivated because all of a sudden there's a solution for
right.
their problem.
Now they have a clear direction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how'd you get into the research side of the business?
I fell into it in a way. I was actually started out on the advertising side, moved into the marketing side, consulting for folks with brand strategy development and positioning. And we realized that we would often come into situations where we were missing little pieces of information.
Mm-hmm.
And we would stop, and the clients would go and execute the research, and we would sit in the back room. We were one of those folks behind the glass.
Right.
And find out what we needed to know and then continue our project. And we finally realized, hey, why aren't we doing this ourselves? We are the people who know what we need to find out.
Right.
And we're just sitting around waiting for that to be done. So I started a research arm of the consulting practice I was with at the time, and it just emerged into me eventually spinning off into my own thing.
Now, when you're talking to a new client, is it difficult for them to appreciate the power of the research? You know, it seems like that the people, it's easier to spend money on advertising or marketing than it is on thinking about what you should write in the advertising and the marketing.
I think most of the people that come to me already have a sense of the value of the research.
Uh-huh.
I'm typically not going out and selling research per se because I'm fortunate enough to have a foundation of clients who already have that sense and appreciation. But it is sometimes important and a pivotal decision for them to make the investment if they have an emotional connection to a particular campaign or a particular direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're a little bit afraid of what they're going to hear sometimes.
Uh-huh.
You know, I want to do this. My timeline is so short. If it's not right, I may not have time to adjust.
Uh-huh.
And so they're hesitant in those cases to maybe invest in research because they may not have time to undo the problem.
Can you use research like this to inform your pricing strategy as well and make a decision of whether to position yourself at a premium price or whether to go at it a different way?
I think pricing is one of the things that is not something I would use qualitative research to determine. You can understand how people are viewing you today, if they view you as being a premium product or not, if they see you to have value. And if they see you to be underpriced, they'll tell you, or overpriced, they'll tell you. How do they tell you? They tell you through understanding their actions. I'm not buying this because, and sometimes it's because I know everything there is to know about the product and I think you're not worth it.
Right.
And sometimes it's because I don't have all the information. And if you gave me that piece of missing information, then maybe I would find you premium priced. In most cases, I would say that quantitative is usually a better assessment of pricing because people always overestimate the willingness to pay for things in a quantitative environment.
Now, is it possible to do too much research?
I think yes. I think you don't want to invest in research to the point of being paralyzed by it.
But how do you find that sweet spot?
You know, there is a point when you can have all the direction in the world, and if going back to some of your conversation with Moira earlier, if you are too risk averse and you're unwilling to go ahead and make that commitment, then you're never going to get anywhere. The day is just going to go by, and as you're planning for research, the year is going away.
Right.
And so there just comes a point that's a management decision, and you have to say, I have enough information here, I have enough insights, and I think I understand my customers to establish an effective plan that is as good as any plan I can develop given today, and just move forward.
And that's probably why they hire you. You can tell them when you have enough, right?
Yeah, sometimes I will I would suggest other research. Sometimes there is naturally a quantitative piece that follows because they will need the quantitative support behind some of the theories that they develop and the hypotheses they develop in qualitative. That's a very common practice. But in some cases, there will need to be a follow-up piece of qualitative. And in that case, I will tell them. Many cases, no.
Can I throw in a point on that? I totally agree with that. And we do find, especially in the technology sector where people have to move at the speed of light, often you get a really good read and you need management to just make a decision. And what we always encourage our clients to do is let the market prove it out. Let's get to market with it, let the market prove it out, and then we can go back in for the next round.
So the market becomes the focus group.
Mm-hmm.
Are you finding that more and more?
Yeah, I think the speed of decision making is faster than ever. When I started my business 20 years ago, it was very common for people to give you six or eight weeks to turn around a piece of qualitative that is now being turned around in three.
Wow.
And people have already acted on summaries and top lines, or acted before they can on the debrief after the meeting, before you can even get the report out.
Wow.
And so things, in particularly in marketing, are happening at such a rapid pace today that they have to be willing to kind of click the switch.
Now, in your who are your clients? What's a profile of your client look like? Are they agencies? Or are they the actual companies?
Most of my clients are the companies. There are occasions when I work directly with the agencies, but in most cases, it's larger consumer products companies, multi-brand companies. Could be consumer packaged goods, could be in the hospitality, financial world, a number of different businesses.
So they don't have their own research? It's better for them to hire an outside vendor for this?
Usually they have their own research department. In some cases, they just have a vice president of marketing and no, or director of marketing and no research department.
Mm-hmm.
But even in cases where they have a research department, they're still looking for an outside company to manage the qualitative because they need that independent opinion.
Right, that outsider perspective.
So where can our listeners reach out and learn more?
A couple of places, joylynn.com, and I would say that is the number one place. And also they can pick up the phone and call me or email me anytime.
Well, thanks for coming to visit with us.
Thank you for having me.
You going to hang out with us while we visit with our other guests?
I certainly will.
Okie doke. Next up on Results Matter, we have with us from Newport Board Group, a very patient and I'm sure responsive, Catherine Cates. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
So I thought I saw you taking notes. I saw you nodding and agreeing. Yeah. And did you learn anything out of those last two segments?
I did. I wonder how people can make such mistakes. Like JCPenney seems to be like totally in one area. They need Joy Lynn.
They need Joy Lynn. No, they've been bouncing around a lot, haven't they?
I think those folks made decisions without any data.
I think Mr. Penny probably wouldn't have fallen down this down this road. So, but you talk to folks like Mr. Penny, right? This is what you do. You consult to senior level execs. Is that correct?
We do, but we're more focused on the entrepreneurial segment.
Oh, okay. So tell us more.
Newport is a national firm, and what we do is focus on helping entrepreneurial companies grow. Companies get past the startup stage, generally based on the enthusiasm of an entrepreneur for a product or market, and they think, okay, I've made it. But the truth is there's a whole set of predictable barriers that start when you get to about 7 to 10 employees up through 100 employees. And just like Maura said, there are holes that you fall in. And she wrote a book about marketing. Our chairman has consulted to 1,000 companies, and he wrote a book about what he called no man's land, which are the predictable business barriers across all aspects of a company. And he said, you know, we need to help people get across that. And we feel like that entrepreneurs in that range are under stress and they're scattered And the most effective way to help them is one-on-one interaction with experienced business executives that can bring that whole suite of experience to them, not just the individual product knowledge that they have. So that's why Newport Board Group was formed. We're a national company. We have 70 partners around the country to help entrepreneurs grow their business.
So now what are some of those obstacles that are in no man's land?
Well, everybody has a little slogan. We have the four M's, and the four M's are market, having a clear vision of what your value proposition is, and Maura and Joy Lynn have talked about how hard that is to know what the market wants. So you've got to know what the market wants, and then internally, the CEO and the management team need to be on the same page. And that sounds simple, but a lot of the time, Maura's shaking her head, you're not on the same wavelength. And if you're not all going towards the same target, you're not going to hit it. So market is the first one. The second one is management. Everybody has, you know, brother, friend, somebody that helped them get through those first few years, sat up all night, putting labels or shipping or whatever you needed to do. But when you're going to go to the next level, you need a real professional marketing person or a real CFO type rather than a controller or a bookkeeper. And so the biggest challenge is getting that next level of professional management. And
so is it your job to just get rid of all the old friends and family members?
Well, we help them. You know, obviously people are constrained by cash, so we help them prioritize. Mm-hmm. And we can come in as an advisor and help them fill some of those gaps so that, you know, they may not need a full-time CFO, but they may need somebody that can sit down and say, you know what, growth eats cash. So let me help you figure out where your cash is going, and let me help you prioritize, should you go to a bank, you know, what assets do you have that you might be able to use. So we help them with the we can fill some management gaps mm-hmm. there. The third thing is the model. Is your business scalable? Some businesses don't grow profitably. If you've got to build a huge plant to get to the next level, that may not be a level of investment you want to do. Or you may be underestimating your cost. Running three locations may take a lot more supervisory management than you figured, and expanding may not make money. So understanding how to grow profitably is a challenge.
And what was the fourth one?
The fourth, money, which money. We've already talked about. So four M's, market, management, model, and money. And, of course, money is the one that a lot of people – you know, we talked to her like, if I just had the money.
So they think that that's the crux of the problem, but that may not necessarily be the problem.
No, and a lot of times it's an indicator. And so what we try to do is sit down with them and first understand where the money's going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you actually collecting your receivables? People hate calling a problem.
They don't know that.
You'd think, but you know, and you may have somebody on your team that is in charge of receivables. But unless you're actually checking, they may not be making those tough phone calls,
mm-hmm.
Or they go on vacation. So that, and then how your processes are set up. I'm helping a company right now, and they've said, you know, we just realized we're shooting ourselves in the foot. It's taken us 2 or 3 weeks to get the bills out.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to an iPad-based system where they're billing right in the field and handing it to the customer. That's going to free up over $100,000 for them.
Right, that simple solution.
And they were doing it to themselves.
Right. Well, I have a fifth M. Go ahead.
You know, one thing I think of, and this is very true, is the entrepreneurial things that usually lead to forming a company is the vision and the idea. And many of those people don't have a lot of financial competency. That is not, they're not analytical people very often. I mean, sometimes they are, but that isn't even in their wheelhouse. That, you know, I'm busy building a dream over here, and I need somebody else looking at the cash.
Right. So it's important to have that kind of person that has it watching the back of everything. Now, is your group generalists or are they specialists?
We can cover a broad range of industries across the 70 partners. My personal focus is entrepreneurial companies 5 to 30 million. We're local here in Atlanta, so we cover all of Georgia. And I've done a lot of work with service companies. But a lot of the issues cross. The cash issue is one that a lot of people have. And I have a deep background in, I was 3 years as a commercial banker and 7 years doing corporate finance. So I understand how to crunch the numbers, but I can boil it down with the CEO and say, look, here's the 3 or 4 numbers you got to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And I can help you bring it down where you only have to spend an hour a week worrying about the numbers that you hate I'll let you, then I'll help you focus.
Pick. So you give them like a dashboard so they can see that?
Some people a dashboard, some people just sitting down and saying, okay, what will make your business grow?
And what are the key metrics and the key drivers? Like they don't understand that sometimes?
The cash, they don't understand, like we talked about, how to collect the money, and Maura's shaking her head. But also, a lot of times they don't understand where they make their money. Their favorite customer, it may have been their first customer, it may be their biggest customer, but sometimes a really big customer is really expensive to service and cuts a really good deal. And if you really look at it, you may not be making money on that customer.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes companies don't understand how much time they're spending. So we're looking at, you know, what markets you select, where you make money, and then what can drive your profitability. Another key factor is that investors look at and that builds value in your business is recurring revenue. You know, rather than selling one time, what can you do once you get a customer? I mean, I was working with a service company in marketing, and they did a great job. They were growing like gangbusters because they were acquiring new customers. But once the new toy was gone, it was this 3 or 4 month old customer, they weren't focusing, so they weren't retaining that revenue, and they were having to go out and replace
it
every
year.
Find another
new customer, yeah.
When you go to sell your business in today's market, the first thing they look at is recurring revenue. So that's a numerical thing. A marketing person, maybe an entrepreneur, may be a great marketer, but if I look at the numbers and say, hey, how are you doing on your retention? Let's work on that. You can double the value of your company.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of entrepreneurs don't understand that.
Right. They're so heads down on selling a new guy that they're not appreciating the current customer.
Right, right.
So now, how do you go to market? Like, because companies, like almost every company has some sort of pain that you guys help with, right?
We do. And so we are meeting with accountants and lawyers to let people know about the services we have.
And so you work through other trusted advisors?
Through trusted advisors to let them know about the services we provide.
Mm-hmm.
And we also do reach out directly to CEOs and tell them about the service we provide because – you know, 90% of CEOs, you think, boy, the master of the universe, you know, they got their Porsche mm-hmm. and everything's great. The truth is that Friday night drive home, you're sitting there going, oh, gosh, what am I, you know, my manager is not doing his job.
Right.
I have assigned them tasks. It's not happening. You know, maybe I want to bring one of my kids in the business, but I don't have the slightest idea how to do that. And being a CEO of a small company is lonely. And we can really come in and bring deep operating experience and a one-on-one that can help them move the ball forward. Because there's usually one thing that if they really addressed it, it would change their business. And they just haven't gotten to it because they can't focus.
Mm-hmm.
And having somebody like us on their team to help them move that forward can really change their business.
And I would think another benefit is, like you said, you have 70 partners. You can find best practices in a vast network that an individual CEO would be able to...
It's not just my personal experience, but we have people all around the country. If you want to source in China, if you want to understand how to integrate two businesses that you've acquired, franchising. I was working with a customer in the beverage industry, and I reached out, and we had multiple people with deep beverage experience. So we can bring that combination of one-on-one with you, and then we can – distill that information down and bring it to you in an actionable way so that rather than having 8 people to deal with, you've got one person on your team that can help you.
Now, what does an engagement with you look like typically? How does it start and what's the rhythm of it?
We work on a retainer basis because we don't want people saying, you know, gosh, if I call Catherine, how much is this phone call going to cost me?
Mm-hmm.
So we work on a monthly retainer basis, and it's renewable, and it's a relatively low cost. $3,000 to $8,000 a month,
mm-hmm.
And so people really see the value in that because we bring a broad range of skills, and again that focus. CEOs have a hard time focusing, and we can help them identify the priorities and then make sure that those top priorities get moved forward, which is key.
And then, how often do you meet with the CEO?
We're available 24/7 by phone or email,
mm-hmm.
and then also we meet with them face-to-face at least once a week.
But initially when you meet with them, how do you get kind of the lay of the land to see where the problems are?
We talk to them, and we also have a tool. Our chairman wrote a book called No Man's Land that describes all these challenges, and we have an online tool that within 20 minutes the CEO takes the assessment, and then his or her management team answers questions online. And within 30 minutes, we've got a whole diagnostic of where they are on all these critical factors that can help their business be successful. So mm-hmm. we can have a really impactful discussion with them and their leadership team
in a short period of time.
Yeah, wow. and it's amazing because so many times the CEO thinks he and the management team are on the same page, but they're not.
Can I say
ask the research lady about that?
Yeah. You know, that is one thing that I have noticed that just screams and resonates with me, because you have no idea how often internal teams are not on the same page, even when they get to the point of research. If you don't have a clear objective and everybody hasn't rallied around that objective, there are so many things that can go wrong. And people are just flailing about and having their own agendas, and everybody's not working towards a common goal.
So it sounds like you all three have seen that.
Oh, definitely. And the other thing about the assessment is it's a very democratic form of getting feedback. So a lot of times your management team may know what the problem is, or they may know what the issues are, and it's hard for them to raise their hand. And in that, it's anonymous, and so they can write. They answer questions, but they can also write freehand comments. And a lot of good ideas percolate up that people have been afraid or haven't had the right forum to share.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to ask Catherine, I imagine working with these CEOs, there's quite a few egos involved. And I would imagine that having a partnership with your firm would allow them to get advice from trusted resources without having to go down the ranks and show right. their vulnerability.
Yes, nobody wants to go to the golf course and say, you know, gosh, I just had two managers resign. Do you think maybe I'm a jerk? But they can come to us and say, you know, gee, why do you think that happened? I mean, I just met yesterday with a CEO, and he and his management team, he had said, do this on accounting, and then they went and did it, and he said, oh, my gosh, that's the stupidest thing. And he's like, you know, I didn't tell him that. When he left the room, they both said, he told us that.
Exactly.
So they don't want to admit it, but it's nice to have a one-on-one person that you can.
Right. I bet that alleviates a lot of stress for the CEOs to have this kind of a relationship.
It's huge because I've been a CEO of an entrepreneurial company. It's hard, and stuff happens. And, you know, now you got health care. Nobody really wants to care about health care. They want the employees to be happy,
right.
But all these details.
And it changes all the time. It's impossible to stay up on everything.
Right, and technology, right. Marketing, all these things.
It's a lot of plates spinning.
Yeah, so we can help them get rid of the noise and focus on what's really going to move mm-hmm. their company.
Now, if somebody wants to learn more, where would they go for more information?
Our website is newportboardgroup.com. And my email is catherine.cates@newportboardgroup.com.
And then they could find your location in that website?
On the Newport Board Group, they can go to Atlanta, uh-huh. and I'm on the partner page there.
And then, but there's offices all over?
We have 70 partners in 10 cities around the U.S.
Wow.
In the Southeast here, Nashville, Tampa, Miami, Charlotte, Atlanta.
Are you the main person for Atlanta?
There's three partners in Atlanta, uh-huh. and I'm one of the three.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So you had me at when you were describing the drive home in the Porsche and thinking through the day and your challenges. I can assure you it also happens to executives who own a 2008 Vans. They have the exact same internal conversation that you described. What a delight. Thanks so much for coming to visit with us. I had one last question. When in the life cycle of a business is it appropriate to reach out to you guys? Is the answer early and often, or is there a certain time?
Early and often. We really, once you get past the startup stage, you're past the pure survival.
Yeah.
Once you start getting your headlights up, you know, from 5 employees on up is when these issues start arising. And, you know, you say, oh, gosh, you know, I don't want to add any costs. But it can save you a lot of money and a lot of time. And the ability to have this kind of advice, you know, from 70 people around the country is just unparalleled for entrepreneurs.
Well, thanks again so much for coming down and visiting with us.
Thank you.
How about hanging with us while we visit with our last guest?
I will.
All right. Terrific. Lee, you ready for the headliner?
Yes.
Yeah, we've been waiting the entire time, right? please join me in welcoming to Results Matter from Signature FD, Miss Paige Hardy. How you doing?
I am awesome, Stone. Thanks for having me here.
So let's help these ladies make some money personally, too, right? You're in the wealth management world?
I am. Yeah. Have been for over 20 years. Okay, I lied. Over 25 years. I was already starting off lying.
It's over 20.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
So now, you specialize in women investors, or you have a niche of women investors?
Our firm started 17 years ago, obviously serving men and women in wealth management. We're a comprehensive wealth management firm. But last year, we formalized our women's initiative, and I'm the market leader for that initiative. And I'm having more fun, and we're seeing it grow just every day by leaps and bounds.
So can you talk a little bit about that and how that's different than your just more regular initiative?
Yeah, certainly. I feel strongly, and I think you'll agree after I share some information, how important it is now more than ever for women to take control of their financial future. And I'll start off by just sharing what I think are some staggering statistics. 80% of men die married. 80% of women die single.
Wow.
Okay. So their wealth has to last a long time, and much longer now than before.
Or men have to live longer. One or the other.
We got to figure out how to do that. Women are living on average 6 to 7 years longer than men. Women... The fastest growing segment of the population, I always say this wrong, centurions, women or people over 100 years old. It's the fastest growing. So we're living a lot longer. We are also widowhood. I mean, the average age of widowhood now is 56 years old.
Really? 56? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's shocking.
And divorce is still hovering, you know, at 50%. As a matter of fact, the fastest area of divorce that's growing is, we call it the gray divorce, and it's couples over 60. So
that have been together for a while?
They've been married and they're over 60. So
wow,
typically.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's more important than ever to have a plan and make sure your wealth is going to last you and not where you don't have to rely on other people.
And to be nice to your wife, particularly if she's an earner.
That's like exactly right.
There's a lot of
that's
lessons.
That's what I'm learning.
Wow.
There are just so many women that we have come into our office that they're part of, I don't know if you've heard of it, but the If Only Club. If only I had talked to you earlier, I wouldn't have to make such drastic changes in my life. You know, if only I had known how much debt we really had, I wouldn't have given the children money for a house.
So sometimes they're not aware of the current financial situation?
No, and we need to change that, and that's what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes they don't even know, you know, that the wills are unsigned and sitting in a desk drawer. I mean, there's so many things that women need to take control of. Absolutely.
So then how do you address this with the women?
Well, what we've done is last year, as I mentioned, we formalized our women's initiative. We got together the owners and partners of the firm to come up with what we're going to call it, and it is Signature Women.
Uh-huh.
We came up with our mission and our vision. And our mission is to financially empower women to use their wealth to lead a great life. Our vision is to be the number one wealth management firm in Atlanta that women turn to and advisors refer to. We really started this by having a couple of events and inviting women to join us.
Mm-hmm.
And the community that we saw building after these events was so powerful. Women were trading business cards. At this point, and I'll jump forward a little bit, we've got women going into business together. We've got women traveling together because they're finding other like-minded women that are like them.
Right, and they found this common ground, right? They were all in the same boat.
Absolutely.
That's great.
We also formed an advisory board, which has just been tremendous. We have 13 of our women clients from all phases of life that come together to help us make sure we're going down the right road, mm-hmm. that we're offering things that they want, not
right.
just that we think they want. So we are, you know, primarily trying to, you know, answer all the needs through education, a specialized education. We do lunch and learns on different topics that they tell us they want to hear about. Communication. We have a website and a blog series on items that women are interested mm-hmm. in. We also have a designated team of advisors that are trained to work with women. I mean, you've probably heard, men talk in headlines. Women want to tell their story, And you have to listen to that story, because they're not going to trust you or respect you unless you know their whole situation. I mean, how can you really help them if you don't?
Right.
So it's a whole different kind of communication that we feel, you know, is necessary.
So then when you put the word out that you're trying to get women to come to one of these events, are they nervous about coming there? Like, is there things that they don't want to know about? And, you know, like, because I would think that especially successful women, when you say on one hand they don't know that their family doesn't have any money, but on the other hand they're successful in their business or career, how does that kind of door get opened where that they're willing to look kind of and see what really is happening in their own finances?
That's a good question, and probably our biggest challenge. The biggest resource that women have the least of is time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Many of us are running businesses. We're taking care of children. Sometimes we're taking care of adult children, mm-hmm. and sometimes we're taking care of parents.
Right.
It's like the sandwich generation, you
right.
know? So how do we have time, no matter how independent and successful we are, how do we have time to put something that we're, and this isn't for everybody, but a lot of women, that they're not comfortable with.
Right.
It's not something they enjoy. We have to exercise. We have to eat right. Trying to find time to put your finances on the front burner can be very hard.
Right.
So to answer your question, the community we're building is things like this that get their attention. You know, I think the way of the old networking is just gone, especially for women. I mean, just a waste of time, boring, right? So we're having lunch and learns on topics that they've asked us about. For example, we have a lunch and learn on onboarding for women that want to get back in the workforce. Offboarding, women that want to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
We had Maura Vetter come and talk to the entrepreneurs out there on did a book signing, which was fabulous. We have done, I think one of the best ones we've done recently is we did a lunch and learn on if you find yourself suddenly single from death, divorce, or dementia or disability of your spouse. It was such a success, and the women left saying, oh, I wish I brought my sister or my neighbor, my friend, that we're having it again in January.
Right, because that subject touches, even if it doesn't touch them directly, I'm sure they know somebody who it's touching.
Exactly. So, see, that's an example of how this community is growing.
Mm-hmm.
But we also shake it up a little bit. We have social and business networking opportunities that hopefully one of these will reach everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, every event's not for everybody. I'll give you an example. Last week, we went, we took some women to go shoot some guns. We went to the Sandy Springs Gun Club. It's a women-owned business. The Workman sisters own it. And we told them they were allowed to bring pictures of their ex-husbands or boyfriends to hang up if they wanted to. And we actually had a safety lesson, and we shot guns. And then we all went out for margaritas.
And I'm still mad that I got stuck in traffic and I didn't get to shoot.
And I'm mad that I didn't get invited to that.
I know. We'll have to put you on the list for next time for sure. We've done Iron Chef challenges.
Mm-hmm.
We have one coming up we're repeating because it was so fun. It's a makeover and martinis at Woo Cosmetics. Mm-hmm. And she brings in Lynn Silber, who owns Woo, who's fabulous. She's bringing in 10 makeup artists. And we're supplying the signature teenies. And Le Pen next door is catering the event. And so it's fun trying to just be, you know, across the spectrum. We're also doing flower arranging for the holidays, okay? But then we also have more serious events. And we speak to different women's groups and different corporations about how to be financially fit and the, you know, top questions that women need to know about their finances. And then we've started a quarterly health and wellness. And that's been a huge success. That kind of touches everybody, right?
Right.
We've done yoga clinics. We just did a self-defense clinic. And we kind of throw in the gun shooting in that arena as well. And then in the fall, we're doing an interval kickboxing. So we're hoping to get women come together, and we've seen it. I mean, I know 6 people now that have started a yoga practice from bringing them together because they've met other people.
Right.
And they sign up together. I mean, it's so inspiring.
Now, has this initiative been, like, surprising when you look back? Are you more successful than you anticipated?
Yes. I mean, it's so exciting. When we came up with the vision of being the number one wealth management firm for women in Atlanta, it was like, you know, scary.
Yeah, well, you're like, well, that sounds good. Okay,
doesn't
now we have
good.
To do it, right?
I so see that happening. I can't. I wake up in the morning excited about it. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me.
So now, what advice would you have for women that are interested in this?
For women that want to, other advisors or
yeah, like other advisors. Sure.
I think what's really important is to show your women clients you value their ideas. Listen to each voice. Don't come in the room with an agenda. Listen. And if you're working with couples, I think, and this is very important to women out there, of being in women and couples, both be at the meetings. Require that if you're the financial advisor. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be your husband's advisor. It should be my advisor. I mean, that's extremely important.
So you don't see that all the time? That sometimes
no,
the relationship's don't. Just with one?
We see it too often.
Wow.
And we're trying to change that. Mm-hmm. We're trying to change that. But I tell you one thing that I think women is a stickler on it, and I've got quite a few male partners, and we're working on this. If you, and they do a great job, but if you say, I'll give you a call on Friday, or I'll follow up with this on Friday, mm-hmm. follow up with it on Friday. Because I think what happens when a man hears that, they think, okay, she said or he said she's going to do it. Check it off my list.
Right.
A woman, until it's done, until she has, you have that trust and respect, she's going to think, I wonder if she did that.
Or
I wonder
if forgot,
he's going to do that.
Right,
did they forget that? And it's going to be top of mind. And if you can't get it by Friday, if you promise something, that's okay. Just tell them.
Right.
Day got away from me. I promise today, but I will get with you on Monday. It's such a little common sense thing, but I think that's a difference in women and men communicating.
Right, the follow-up. Mm-hmm. And being heard and listened to and actually following through with what you promise.
Exactly.
Hey, can I interject something
sure.
here? I think you brought up something really interesting because a lot of those things that you're talking about, a lot of the activities that you've planned are really building self-esteem and camaraderie among women. And it's amazing just through research that I've done how often that happens, that that's the first thing that needs to get built back up among that if-only crowd.
Oh, that's so true. And especially we work with women, any woman that wants to take control of their finances. Mm-hmm. But where we're making a huge difference is women in transition. And I'll just, as an example, women going through a divorce. You know, the divorce rate is increasing. There are a lot of people out there. I mean, I especially like working with women going through divorce. You know, many times women have less experience with investment topics and they need a crash course in finance, but it's a time when their lives are already in turmoil. And so you really need to, look for two things. I mean, they're looking for someone they can trust and someone they can respect. And once you help them understand their financial future and that they're going to be okay, no matter where they are in their life. And sometimes you have to have some hard conversations to say, you need to do this to be okay. But once they know that, the confidence and clarity, you know, they have the clarity, they have the confidence.
I think it's really important to work with somebody who understands that, because I remember a number of years ago I did a research project for a major bank among women business owners like us.
Right.
And they asked what the number one problem was and what the number one challenge that they had when they go to a bank for their business. And it was that people would not give them the loan until they said, are you sure you don't need your husband to take a look at this first?
Ouch. So that's being said even today.
Even today, people were in these professional environments not understanding that women are doing things on their own and women are having to do things on their own or choosing to, and getting to that place where you feel good, you've got a multi-million dollar business, and you're the only person making the decisions, and then somebody goes, do you need to talk this over with your husband before? And the husband might not even be part of the business.
Right. That's crazy.
We need to change that.
Yes. So now if a woman wanted to learn more about your events, is there a website?
Yes. We are www.signature, like you sign your signature.
Mm-hmm.
F is in financial, D is in design, signaturefd.com. On our website, if you go to initiatives, you'll see more about the Women's Initiative Signature Women.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Results Matter Radio.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4255. 4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.